That's right. There's a, you know, along that line of thinking, and we're still dealing with the idea of Satan entering into their life, our lives. There's a controlling mechanism that I guess you could say we kind of shake it out with God. It's a real simple verse, but for me, it's answered a lot of questions. You can take this verse into the subject of predestination or talking about the power of Satan or whatever. And it's a real easy verse from Galatians, the 6th chapter, and verse 7. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that will he also reap. We do the sowing, and we will do the reaping. Now, God has set up the parameters, hasn't he? He's the one who's made the law for our existence. He's the one who gives us life and breath. He has made the rules for our spiritual interaction. Whatever we sow, we reap. There's going to be a kind of a cause and effect that we live with. And he has set that up. And he's the one who's in charge of the outcome, I guess you could say, from the standpoint that if I sow to myself lies, God's going to make it so that I'll have an increase. He set that law in motion, and he's going to let me have that increase. Not that he causes me to sin, but he causes me to suffer consequences for my sin. If I put myself on a slippery slope of evil, and that gravel, so to speak, of my own self-control is just slipping out from underneath at me, well, that activity comes about because God has made the law that it should be so. That if I put myself on that slope and I start messing around with these things, it is going to be slippery. God has designed it that way. That's why we have to avoid it, because he's set up consequences for our activities. In like fashion, in the book of 2 Thessalonians, the 2nd chapter, this deals with the falling away, with the apostasy. And it's pretty strong words in the 2nd chapter and in about verse 9, speaks of the coming of the lawless ones according to the working of Satan with all power, signs, and lying wonders, with all unrighteous deception among those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth, that they might be saved. God has taught us about the truth. God has taught us about the good of embracing the truth. But it's up to us to receive it and to receive the love of the truth. That's our responsibility. And if we don't do it, then what's going to happen? What does the passage say? That's going to be deception. Someone read verse 11. All right. Now, it isn't that God is deceiving anybody, but he's making it so that slope is real slippery now, because we've already taken this thing into our life. These are consequences that come out of it. He'll send us a strong belief. It'll be easy for us. I think this is one reason why it's easy for a man or a woman to believe they were homosexual from birth. I believe it is very possible to cross a line in committing an activity that becomes so profound on its effect in our mind that we can be deceived to the point to, we've got to pass this fabricated now. We've got a reason for being this way, and it's a very convincing reason, and it's a strong delusion. And the only thing that can break that delusion is the willingness to accept the truth that it is a delusion, to admit it, or to not try to cover guilt by saying,
in 1 Samuel chapter 16, we have the Saul having and it said, and I'm curious as to thoughts as to this plays into the discussion. Now, the Spirit of the Lord had departed from Saul, and the evil spirit from the Lord were tormented. Well, the 10th said, you didn't see an evil spirit from God's tormented. Search for someone who can play the harp, etc., etc. And verse 23, whenever the spirit from God came upon Saul, David would take his harp and play, and then the leaf would come to Saul. He would feel better than the spirit. I wonder if the entrance of Satan might not be in a similar way where finish off the thing he intended to do. And are these, is this account compatible with what maybe we're witnessing?
I think so. I think that's a real good illustration. It's kind of like you've probably heard or you've witnessed, you've seen people that you know, men who have gotten hung up in pornography, and then pretty soon they start being really mean to their wives. They start being hateful in the way they act. And in time past, they weren't that way. They start getting ugly as a result, and something has entered in and changed them. A spirit has entered in. And we do live in a world of spirits. There are spirits that we're made to. I forget who had the lesson. I think it was Rick's discussion. We were talking about the Spirit of God agrees with our spirit. We are made to abide with the Spirit, with the Lord's Spirit. But there are other spirits that would like to abide there too. And there are spirits that we can agree with that'll make us really ugly. I think that's what was going on with Saul. When it says it from the Lord, it says the same thing. Saul's starting to reap something here. He had sown some seed, and it's coming on in the spirit from the Lord. Something similar in the book of Judges, the 9th chapter, in verse 23. It says, God sent a spirit of ill will between Abimelech and the men of Shechem, and the men of Shechem dwelt treacherously with Abimelech, that the crime done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might be settled and their blood be laid on Abimelech, their brother, who killed them, and on the men of Shechem, who aided him in the killing of his brothers. Here these men had made a conspiracy together, and now there is falling out among thieves. They're returning on one another. There's ill will there. And they opened the door for that. They laid the groundwork for that. But God provided the increase. He made it so. And it isn't that God orchestrates evil, but that rule, we reap what we sow. And there are spirits involved in the reaping. We live in a world of spirits. There are evil spirits out there. Now, I don't think the Lord wants us to be constantly thinking of the evil spirits all around or that kind of thing. But they are there, and they are a part of existence. Primitive cultures look at them too closely, and they're always concerned and worried about them. More primitive thinking people. I remember talking with a man one time, and we made some mention in a meeting about spirits, and I didn't mean to treat it lightly, but I treated it too lightly for his sake, you know. And at the end of the meeting, he said, "It's not funny. We've got demons in our house, and it gives us trouble every day." And he left. He got in his car. He peeled the gravel, and away he went. Well, there was something wrong here. You know, he shouldn't have had that kind of experience. Even if he's not close to Jesus, he shouldn't have had that kind of experience. I know a lot of people who aren't close to Jesus, and they're not frightened because of evil spirits being in their lives or being in their house. But this man got that way because he was too conscious of it. But they are there. And we can reap them in our lives if we're not careful. Let's see, maybe along the same line, Luke, the 23rd chapter, verse 31. And the Lord said, "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for thee, that thy faith fail not. And when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren." Can you see ways in which Satan could have sifted Simon? What you remember of his character and all the accounts in the Bible you study to deal with Simon Peter, what kind of things do you see in Peter that Satan could have capitalized on? Could have sifted him. He was self-confident. He'd say the first thing that comes to his mind sometimes, but he was always willing to speak. We admire when somebody has to speak up. Sometimes he could say a doozy. Sometimes he could say things that were really good, too. Self-confident, impulsive.
It's strange because at times he's not afraid to speak out. Doesn't see those inspirations and all that he's going to do in faith. He's only selling from the Gentiles. He's the same thing in the course of full was that he should have been.
I don't know how true this axiom is, but say every bully is a coward. And a lot of times people that are overly confident underneath are really not so confident. There's an underlying insecurity there. Perhaps that was there with Peter. I've wondered, this is just speculation, but you know, when the disciples argued among themselves which would be the greatest, I can sure see Peter involved in that mix, saying things like, you know, I say the things that you guys are afraid to talk about. I get the heat, but you get the benefit of the lesson. Satan had things to work with in Peter, but Jesus prayed for him.
Those very same things in a slightly more mature form.
Yes. He was able to learn, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He wept with godly sorrow when he saw what he had done for Jesus by denying it. There was something very good about Peter. He was willing to face the truth, the painful truth. That was a man. That's the work of a man. He was something. In the book of 2 Corinthians, the chapter, there's something that's kind of along the same line. It doesn't deal directly with the idea of Satan entering in, but the idea of Satan being able to use situations to his advantage. 2 Corinthians chapter 2, and let's see. Let's take verse 5. If anyone has caused grief, he has not grieved me, but all of you, to some extent, not to be too severe. This punishment which was inflicted by the majority is sufficient for such a man, so that on the contrary you ought rather to forgive and comfort him, lest perhaps such a one be swallowed up with too much sorrow. Who is that talking about, do you think?
I think it's in 55. They had done the thing Paul had asked them to do, and as a result,
they withdrew from him, and he evidently repented. He came back. Now, he speaks about being swallowed up with too much sorrow. Therefore, I urge you to reaffirm your love. And verse 10, whom you forgive anything, I also forgive. And then he says, I have forgiven that one for your sakes in the presence of Christ, lest Satan should take advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices. How do you suppose Satan could take advantage of a situation like that? Here's a man who had done a terrible thing, committed incest, but he comes back, hat in hand. Not forgive. Treat him like kind of like a second class brother. I don't know. Indicates that it was possible that there's too much sorrow. Yes.
They didn't felt like they should do that. What they would do is they would give that to the insurance of that. They would
say, they could kind of obscure their future reception. That's a good point. That's a really good point. I didn't
know that. They found building on the site with all the different things. They would crowd and maybe. And then they went. I'm not sure if this is going to be the
we always have to be careful when someone does come back. Of course, we never want to make it comfortable for them to feel like, I'm accepted for what I did. But instead, that we have the idea in mind there's sorrow there. All right, brother. We're glad to have you back home. Well, let's time for us to close. Let me just wrap up with one thing. Area that I was kind of hoping to get into a little bit. In our time, there are people who believe that demons do all kinds of things. And when you start believing this, and you open yourself up to those very things that don't affect, very negative effect in your life. I came across this article. Maybe some of you who troll the Drudge Report from time to time saw the same thing. It's about a man who's an exorcist, what he had to say about the late Harry Potter movie. His name is, they call him Father Yetner, and he officially is an exorcist for the Roman Catholic Church. He said, God has given me the grace to remain unafraid. Demons are basically handcuffed, and they know it. And here's one of the things he had to say. It says, exorcism and the church militant, I guess this is a book he wrote, is intended in part as a warning to parents who allow their children to be desensitized to the dark world by books and films like the Harry Potter series and vampire books of Stephanie Meyer. Yetner told me possession is almost always a result of someone getting involved in some sort of occult practices, such as witchcraft, Wicca, tarot cards, and Ouija boards. And he went on to talk about Harry Potter and that type of thing. But the point is that here is something that's set up as a force for good. We know about this evil coming into the world. Satan can use this to possess you. He said, demons play by the rules, as it were. They can only enter a person when invited, and they will leave when subjected through the rite of exorcism to the authority of the church. All demons understand this authority. And the point here is that you do have gross evil, and people can be influenced. With regard to these writings or books or whatever, you know, you have to use judgment and to be persuaded in your own mind. But the point I want to make on this is that what he's setting up here is a stage for there to be a clear path to evil and a clear path for addressing that evil. Where is that clear path for addressing that evil? He's not pointing to Jesus. He's pointing to the authority of the Catholic Church. And those kind of scenarios can be set up, I believe, to confuse. There's something very satanic in that, just as satanic as witchcraft or other things. But it has the expression of something that's good, that's pleasant. You know, we're casting out demons, and we have the authority to do that. Really, I think that people who do get hung up in the occult and are bothered in spirit by things like that, they don't need an exorcist. They need the love of a brother or sister in Christ and willingness to sit down and look at the things that are written and to have faith, to be strengthened in faith. Well, thank you for your time. Talk to you tomorrow.